And Workforce Development Policy Division will be in order. Again, today's date is Thursday, February 21st. So on the agenda, first now we have the confirmation hearing of Governor Dayton's appointees. We have... This is the first committee hearing where we've done this with the two different agendas, so we're working through it. It's okay. We have two Board of Trustee recommendations before us, and so we appreciate them. At this point, we'll call them to the table. Today, we'll hear from Margaret Anderson Kelleher and Alfredo Oliveira. So we'll start with Ms. Margaret Anderson Kelleher, and it's always funny to see you on that side of the table, but it's a pleasure to see you, and I understand that the last time when the other trustee recommendations were before us, you were in Washington. So we're glad that you were able to come back and visit with the committee and that we have a chance to consider your confirmation.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you very much, and thank you, committee members. I'm honored to be before you today, and thank you for having another hearing. I apologize. I was on a long-scheduled work trip to Washington, D.C. Actually, the trustee sitting next to me, we both ran into each other at Congressman Ellison's office, so we had a little chat about that we were missing our confirmation hearing. So we're delighted that we could come before you today. I am pleased to be before you. The governor Governor Dayton appointed me to the board in the summer, and I served at my first Board of Trustees meeting in September, I believe. And I just want to tell you a little bit about why I sought the position of being a trustee to the Minsky system. I have a long history with the Minsky system through my family ties, and Senator Sharon knows these ties well. My great-grandmother actually received a teaching certificate from what was then the Mankato Normal School, the precursor to Mankato State University and now Minnesota State Mankato. My mother's a graduate, my sisters are graduates, and you probably wonder why I'm not a graduate. Well, I went 10 miles up the road to a place called Gustavus Adolphus College, and fate was against me. My pastor would later confess that he baptized me in the name of Gustavus Adolphus College. He so badly wanted one of the children in my family to go there. And being a farm family, my father had an eighth grade education, and he did not always see how he could send his children to college. But both my sister and I are graduates of college. We both hold master's degrees. And I am pleased to say that dedication to higher education is what drives me to serve. I also think it's important to tell you a little bit about my professional life since leaving the legislature. I serve as president and CEO of the Minnesota High Tech Association, and I loved hearing the presentation by Metro State, by Senator Herr and his colleagues from Metro State. Because to put a finer point on it, 188,000 of the jobs of the future by 2018 are going to need some form of higher education in the science, technology, engineering, and math-related fields. And as Senator Kent pointed out, we may not be able to fill those all with Minnesotans that we have right here in the state right now, but we darn well better try to do that. And so the focus of the Chancellor and the Board of Trustees to do a number of things very well. First of all, increase the completion rate for the students who are entering in our system today and who might return to the system, which is also an important part of the completion process. The ability to make sure that the jobs that are going to be there in the future for Minnesotans are the jobs that we are training for, both today and into the future. So a closer alignment with the needed workforce across the state, Madam Chair, is an important role that I think I can help play as a trustee on the Minsky board. And then I also see it, Madam Chair and members, as very important that we are doing our part to meet the demographic needs of the state of Minnesota. And that means making sure that our doors are open and welcoming to all the Minnesotans. And I think that you will see that our campuses do reflect Minnesota today. 60,000 of the students who are at the MinSCU colleges and universities are people of color today. That is going to grow. Our demographics are going to grow. That is true across the state of Minnesota. And we need to make sure that we are both a welcoming place as well as have the faculty that's reflective of being able to teach the new students of the future, and that we're able to attract those students in from out of state, from other places as well. So I'm pleased to be before you. The job of the trustee has particular roles with it, of course, hiring and being able to manage the chancellor position, but then also the fiduciary responsibilities. The trusteeship is something that I take very seriously, and I'm pleased to be before you for confirmation.
Ms. Anderson Kelleher, I'm pleased that you have put your hat in the ring for this position, because I think you do have a unique background, both from your years in the legislature, but in watching you lead at the High Tech Association. And so I think that you bring skills that are very important to today's times. I don't know if you've been following the course of the committee, but we have made a particular commitment to student debt reduction and to graduation rates, and so we hope that you'll join us in that effort. And then lastly, I just want to ask you a question with regard to our conversation we had a couple days ago around MOOCs. Mm-hmm. We had the founder, Daphne Kohler, the founder of Coursera, with us, and after that, the University of Minnesota issued a press release saying they were going to be doing some MOOCs courses. What do you see the potential role for MinSCU in that conversation? And I don't know if you heard, but actually one of the things that she mentioned is that five of their courses have now been accredited via just the ACE organization, and one of them was a remedial course in math. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what your thoughts are.
So, Madam Chair and committee members, senators, first of all, as the other part of my life is I paid a third of the tuition to the University of Minnesota yesterday for our son, who's a freshman there. And so I know this from the parental standpoint as well, the value of higher education today and how important it is. And so getting good value, and I think that plays right into your question about online learning and what's happening. The legislature in the last number of years has said to particularly the MinSCU system, you need to do better on this front. You need to be offering more courses online, and that has been increasing. For the MinSCU system, the number of courses offered online has been multiplying very rapidly. And we think that that's an important way of being able to serve a diverse student body who is all over the state, who is also able to take those credits and use those towards graduation. So first of all, making sure our own system itself is offering what students need. And particularly, I think it works well in those developmental courses. That's a place that can often be something that is offered in the online format, and so that is particularly of interest. I also think there's a lot of discussion right now in the Chronicle of Higher Education and the broader higher education community. I'm sort of a little jealous of you. You got to hear from the head of Coursera, and I think that was a great opportunity, and what a wonderful thing, because it is quite innovative to have this affiliation going on that is bringing together, you know, the world's leading universities to be able to open up the access to higher education. But we also know a few things about that process. Completion rate is not good, and I'm sure that you talked about that completion rate is actually much lower than many of our standard in the seat time universities and colleges. And so that's something that online we have to figure out, because that's not necessarily, even students who are doing online courses at the high school level have trouble completing online. And I think that there might be a more blended model that may work out there. The piece that I think is interesting, I do think it's interesting, the University of Minnesota has been granted acceptance into the Coursera model. I think in they're calling it their final cohort, but you know, that is a fascinating piece of this. Now, the piece that I think we have to get right, and I'm on the task force. I know you've heard a little bit about the task forces that have been set up to look at issues of the future. Education of the future is the task force that I'm serving on. So we're looking at how do people learn best? What sorts of models work best for learning into the future? How will the system acknowledge and accept in on the when the day comes when credits are granted and employers start to recognize online learning from the MOOCs, which I think will happen eventually, how do we as a policy matter handle that question? And I think those are some of the big things that we have to wrestle with as a board of trustees into the future.
I hope you lead the way and don't wait on that. And then just lastly, I want you to know that on March 7th, EdX is coming to our committee, and that's the group that's Harvard and MIT led. And so you missed perhaps Daphne Kohler, but you're welcome to come back.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, very good. Now, Mr. Oliveri.
Go
ahead, Senator Sheeran.
I just wanted to mention that not only is Minnesota State University Mankato in Senate District 19, but also Gustavus. So both of these higher education students or situations are, I'm proud to say, in my Senate district. So.
And Senator Sheeran, I think that's why you're on this committee, because you know it's important to your community.
I have five of them. So.
Yes.
So, Madam Chair and
yes,
Senator Sheeran,
my
last visit to a campus was actually last Friday night for the Mavs game where they beat Michigan Tech, and I was right there singing the song that we sing after every goal, as you well know. So.
Very good. Mr. Oliveri.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alfredo Oliveira, and first I want to apologize for not being able to make to our meeting last week. I was also in Washington, like Margaret said, meeting with both of our senators and all three representatives and talk about higher education and the future of what we should be leading to. First of all, I'm a student at St. Cloud State University, right now pursuing a bachelor's in political science and then a minor in management. I will be graduating next May, so a year from now. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking to also going to grad school. I graduated in 2010 from St. Cloud Technical and Community College with a degree in sales and management, and then actually this spring, I'm going to get another degree in business management. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Working hard. I'm taking it one. So I'm full-time right now at St. Cloud State, and I'm also part-time at Noka and Ramsey, taking one class that I need to graduate. So working on that, going to school. But so from the beginning, a little bit of background. In high school, actually, once I met with my counselor, and she said, hey, you're not going to go to college. There's no way you're going to go. And looking back, I think I just want to bring that up because there's so many of our minorities are told that they're not good enough sometimes. And I think I'm proud to be in front of you to say that's not right. And I'm a result of that I actually went through and I believed in my dreams. And that's why I'm here today. So when I started college, that's why I went to St. Cloud Technical first, get some of general education done and go into my technical class. I got involved with Student Senate. So the first semester I was there, I was a legislative liaison for the Senate, and then I ran for VP and then eventually president. And then that's when I graduated. During my college, I got really involved also with the President's Council. I went to the Higher Learning Commission, our credit body, and I did a presentation about going from a technical college to a comprehensive college, which we just did that a couple years ago. And right after that, I decided to apply to be a Men's School Trustee. I thought it was a good idea to give back to the state, to the students, and share my story with all our state. So in 2010, I got appointed, and then last summer, my term was up, and I said, I'm still in school. I love doing this. I like talk about higher ed and shaping the future. We just hired a new chancellor. So, like, what a great opportunity for me to come back. So I applied, and Governor Dayton reappointed me. So that's why I'm here today seeking confirmation, and I'm really excited about it. As a trustee, I just want to also mention about your massive online courses. I actually read that yesterday on our legislative like summary, and I got excited because I was like, oh, I wish I was there, because actually I am taking, besides being a full-time student, part-time student, I am taking an online class. Mm-hmm. I'm starting another one, actually a Harvard one, in Justice. It's called Justice, What's the Right Thing to Do with Professor Michael Sandel. He's actually from Minnesota, but he teaches at Harvard. It's just because I love philosophy, I love Plato, Socrates, and political, so I'm taking that class just for fun. But when you talk about that, I just have an issue when you talk about, it's the assessment. If online classes are so easy for students to, you have to be motivated to be in that class. Mm-hmm. It's a good opportunity and a good solution regarding to price and cost, but the student who signed up for the class has to be really willing to take the class. So it's sometimes in remedial education, those students need a hands-on help. So I think it's cost-effective, but I wish they would have at least tutors or support. So when you talk about eventually online class, you need to consider that support and extra help for those students. But I just want to share with you, and I am excited. I put out here March 7th, but if I don't have class, I might come here, sneak here to listen to them. But I mean, my goal here with the board is to represent minorities, help our students, give back to the state, and then shape the higher ed of the future. Chancellor Rosenstone has a great plan. It's great working in that with his leadership and with the board. I think we're really united. We have a common goal to advance higher education in Minnesota. With that, I think I'll just stand for questions and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Oliveira. And we noticed that you are trilingual. That's quite an accomplishment. My goodness. Portuguese, obviously English and Spanish. So you are somebody who lives what you talk, and you have a love of learning that is clear in your presentation. And so we salute that and really congratulate you on your accomplishments.
Thank you.
Your point is well taken about MOOCs. Yet what they say is that the feedback is given so often because you have to answer questions and then you get told whether it's right or it's wrong, and it actually tells you if you did a certain answer that was wrong, it gives you a guide to perhaps to rethink it. And so they say that in some ways it keeps you more engaged than a traditional lecture class, but of course not as engaged as an applied learning or one-on-one tutor, so somewhere in the middle. And then one of the things that, you know, I think contributes to this lack of completion on the MOOCs is lack of credit. Mm-hmm. That's an incentive credit. So all worth exploring. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Oliveira? So who would like to move?
I'll move.
You want to move them both, Senator Lori?
Sure. I'll move. I don't have the motion in front of me, but I move we accept the governor's appointments.
There you go.
Of Margaret Anderson Kelleher and Alfreda Oliveira to the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities be recommended for confirmation.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is passed. Congratulations.
Thank you, so thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thanks for being here. Senator Eakin, yes. Would you like to present your bill?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And House 41, and I do have a couple of amendments now. I noticed that there weren't amendments.
I think we were catching you on the mic, if you want to pull the mic closer to you.
I did have two amendments, are they available?
Senator Eakin, we have one amendment.
I don't have one. Okay. There should be one more on the way. I had my assistant copy off some. So, if you could pass
the amendment that we have before us right now is the A1, which is the one that talks about the counties. So we'll get that to you too.
Sure. And I guess I would like to move that amendment. And first of all, I'd like to move Senate File 241 to be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Well, let's first just recommend let's incorporate
just
the amendment
the
and then we'll have the bill before us.
Okay.
Very good.
And I will, so I will move the A1 amendment. So,
all those in favor of the A1 amendment? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is passed. So now we've got Senate File 241 as amended.
And again, there will be one more amendment that should be coming. I guess we could just wait on that until it arrives so that we can...
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and just tell us about the bill, and we'll include that when it comes.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. This bill is really designed to address the loss of population and the rural areas of our state. One of the things that's been I've heard often said is our biggest export has been our children. Right. And so we want to work to try to keep many of our young people in the area employed. And we found that there's a number of businesses that do need these young people, but have not been able to make connections with these young people. So we have a bill here that's designed to make those connections between the young people of our area who are attending college there and those businesses who could use their employment and their talent and their skills. So what this bill does is it offers internships. Authorize a new internship program. It would be administered by the Office of Higher Education through post-secondary institutions that are eligible for the state grant program. So it would include, you know, the privates. It would include the University of Minnesota. It would include MinSQ. All of these colleges, for-profit and not-for-profit, would all be included in this program. And all of the internships must be located in Greater Minnesota, and that's what the First Amendment was dealing with. In those areas of the state where we've been seeing a decline in the population, we've seen that as a result of the last redistricting, we noticed the loss of population significantly in our area. It must be taken, these internships must be taken for academic credit. Employers who meet the requirements would receive funding to help pay the interns. So it would be coming through the business community. It would incentivize the business community to seek out these interns and make those connections with the students. And hopefully, and again, the intent here is to expand business activity in our areas as well. So the legislation authorizes a tax credit of 40% of the intern's compensation, up to $4,000 per intern, for a maximum of 5 interns in a taxable year, and it limits the total tax credits in the biennium to $11 million. So, and there is a fiscal note with it, indicates an $11.2 million cost to this program. This would provide approximately 2,400 internships lasting for 24 weeks. It does require that students have to be admitted to a major program that is closely related to the intern experience. And there would have to be written requirements also between the employers and the institutions, the higher ed institutions. The agreement would require that there be an internship that lasts 12 weeks or longer, paying at least a minimum wage for a minimum of 16 hours per week, and to provide academic credit for that internship. The employers must also state the intern would not have been hired without the credit, and the intern does not replace existing employees. So those are some of the provisions in this bill. I know there's another bill that is similar that MinSQ has been proposing. We don't feel that we're in competition with that bill. We're working along with those folks for the same goal here. There's some differences in that this kind of works more through the businesses, whereas MinSQ works more through the college and the students themselves. I think one of the benefits of the way we're doing it is it incentivizes a business maybe to expand and to expand more economic activity in our area, which is badly needed. And it also, another difference, obviously, is that the MinSQ one just applies to the MinSQ institutions, whereas this applies to, you know, all the higher educational institutions that are eligible for the grant program, students are eligible for the grant program. So I see that as also being important because that does kind of level the playing field. I think that students, no matter what colleges they go to, should have these opportunities and that it also, I think, would probably provide that opportunity for a larger number of students. I know that the Minsky proposal does propose a 50% credit, which I think focuses it on a smaller group of students. Ours is 40%, so it spreads it out a little bit more broadly. But the there is one other amendment that that has just been handed out, so I will also move that amendment to the bill, and that is the A13-0068 amendment.
So Senator Eakin moves the A13. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Go ahead.
Can we fix those in discussion since I already...
Senator Eakin, I'm going to withdraw the motion right now to incorporate it, and I think council thinks there might be a couple technical issues with your amendment.
Oh, okay.
So, Mr. Fuller?
Senator Eakin, I'm just wondering, lines 8 and 12 of your amendment, there's this notion of a qualifying intern. I'm not understanding why that's there. If you have a disability, you either do or you don't. And it seems to add something that doesn't need to be added. What does that mean? It seems like it might get in the way of another determination is unnecessary. You either have a disability or don't, and either they're an intern or they don't, and then I'm not sure what qualifying adds.
Okay. So,
Senator Eakin, is there a qualification?
Senator Sharon,
in response to that, the question is whether or not if there's something different about a qualifying intern. And as I read this, I thought there was some discussion that there is a requirement, some requirements that the student must be enrolled in a course of study that's closely related to the internship.
Right. It's okay.
Okay. Senator Eakin?
Madam Chair.
It's all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Council,
other ones are real technical. So.
Okay. Well, and I think actually what I'd like to do is have a broader discussion about the amendment, but had thought we would just vote on it to have it before us and then for discussion, because I think it takes some discussion explanation separate from the rest of the bill. So with that, let's Senator Eakin renews his motion to amend Senate File 241 with the A13. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. Very good. Senator Eakin, can you describe your amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this amendment, it adds an incentive here for people with disabilities, for businesses to seek out people with disabilities. So the added incentive is it would be a 60% credit for people with disabilities. So again, there's an added incentive there for that in this amendment.
So Senator Eakin,
instead of the 40%.
Okay, so if I understand it, so if a business wants to hire an intern that is an intern that is not disabled, then they would get 40% of the salary they pay as a tax credit. But if a business chooses to hire someone with a disability, they would get 60% of what they pay. So there's no requirement to do that. It's just a different incentive.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly,
very
Madam
good.
Chair.
So any questions on that amendment? Okay, back to the bill. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And that's the basic provisions of the bill. And so I do have some testifiers that would like to testify to the bill as well. So if they would want to step forward here.
Senator Eakin, can I ask you why you think that it's important that a student be studying in the area of their internship? I think so often internships give students a chance to broaden what they have experience in beyond what their course of study is, and that actually can change a path for a student. So I'm just wondering if you could say why you put within this bill that it has to be within the student's course of study.
Well, Madam Chair, it's being taken for credit. And so I guess the the feeling was that there should be credit towards their major, program area. So, but it's not, it's something that we could have further discussion about as far as any changes. It's not something that I'm absolutely wedded to, but I guess there was just a feeling that it should be related to their major field of study.
Well, let's hear
and
from
I guess
your
the excuse me, Madam Chair.
No, that's fine, because you have your testifiers come forward, and maybe they'll have an opinion.
Okay, sure. And Madam Chair, I think it's maybe assumed that they would want to be interning in their major field of study. But as you said, there's a possibility that maybe they'd want to expand in some other areas too.
Good.
Senator,
Madam Chair. Senator
Torres-Ray. I'm a little puzzled about I have some questions that are about the fiscal implication here. But we're in policy, so
exactly. So we're not going to. So that's not before us. The fiscal note is not before us. We're just in policy. So this, and then what will happen is this. It's a little strange. This bill will then
come back to you.
Come back. Yep. It'll go to finance and get referred back to the finance division. So we're in policy. If we pass this bill, it will be referred to finance, and then finance will refer it back to higher ed finance. Oh, taxes. I'm sorry. It goes to taxes because it's the tax credit. That's right. Okay. So it doesn't come back here. So if you do have questions, you go ahead and ask them.
It does come back here.
Well, first it goes after taxes, right.
Okay. Yeah. It's just that I have a couple of questions. One is I think this concept is just, you and I have been talking about it, Madam Chair, about the importance of providing opportunities for students. I think this is a very valuable concept. In fact, I'm working on a bill that is similar, but it's for high school students to offer, that opportunity for kids to really come and understand what it means to work in DNR. Sometimes they don't even know what DNR is, and so they come and understand that it's about water and fish and forestry, and it's such a good experience. I think part of the tax portion is something that concerns me, because I feel that if you have an incentive for an employer to kind of take a deduction on it, to what extent will you hire people that help you kind of save that money? And I don't know if you're concerned about it, Senator, excuse me, because when you have a tax credit, you really want to pursue something that gives you a tax credit. So would we be, kind of creating a market for employing, these students, and then would they be competing? Because if I am a person who could employ a student versus a professional, and because I have a tax credit, I may end up dismissing a person and hiring a student who can do the same thing, but I get a tax credit. So I have an incentive to fire a person and hire a student. So I'm confused about, I don't know if you've thought about
Senator Eakin.
This could create a problem.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, and I would have the same concerns, but we did put a written requirement in here. It would be a written requirement that they would have to sign, the employers, the businesses, that they are not replacing workers with interns. And there is going to be some oversight, obviously, from the Office of Higher Education and the participating institution of higher education. So to ensure that this is a new internship, and interns can't be used repetitively. They can only do it once. But this is designed to expand internships and to expand business activity, not to simply replace workers. I know Mariah Miles, who is a student who has participated in such a program, internship, is here to testify, and I think she'd like to speak directly to your concern as well. So maybe we could take testimony at this time from Ms.
Very good. I know there are other members with questions, so let's hear from the testifiers, and then we'll come back to the other questions as well, because I know Senator Sheeran, I think you had a question, and Senator Miller has a question.
When you were first speaking, I thought...
Say your name for the
record. My name is Mariah Miles.
Even if you've been here before, each time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Miles.
My name is Mariah Miles. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I don't know if I want to do my whole testimony first. I just want to touch on your point. At first, I thought you were getting to whether or not these would be decent internships if the students would just be paper pushers. And I thought that was what your point was at first, which is why I pulled aside Senator here first. But... I don't think that would be an issue, even if that wasn't your point. I just want to speak to the fact that I don't think this would be an issue because it is paired with an academic program.
And Ms. Miles, why don't you go ahead and give us your testimony?
All right. I'll jump right into it. As I said previously, my name is Mariah Miles. I'm the state chair for the Minnesota State University Student Association. We represent the 75,000 students at the universities under MinSCU. A little bit of background information. I was born and raised in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And in January of 2010, I transferred to Minnesota State University, Mankato. When I first transferred to Mankato, I had no intention of staying in Mankato. And I slowly became involved in a variety of leadership positions, which eventually led to me being involved in community events, especially with Greater Mankato Growth. And I was on a panel at one of their workforce development job skills gap meetings. And there happened to be members of Taylor Corporation in the crowd that day. And they eventually sought me out and wanted to bring me in to be an intern. And this was done through building a relationship with them and a relationship with members of the university that happened to be mentors as I moved through my program there. And so I'm lucky enough to be a student with an internship, a paid internship. And although it is not specifically tied to my academic program, I can identify how it could be. For the sake of graduating in 5 years and no more than 5 years. I'm not having this be accredited at all in any way. I don't want to receive credit for it. That is my choice. But I can see the benefit entirely in these internships being tied to academic programs because we don't want to be taking any fluff credits. We should be taking as much as possible to get us to the finish line as fast as possible so that we are not gaining more debt, even though this would be a paid internship. And to solidify the reason why I'm here, this internship is being turned into a full-time position when I graduate. And this internship is keeping me in Minnesota and in Greater Minnesota. And I never thought I would be in Minnesota because my family are diehard South Dakotans. My uncle was the Speaker of the House, and I thought I'd be going back, but I'm not. And it's the internship, and that's the reason why I've decided to stay and the reason I can stay.
Thank you, Ms. Miles. And my son, Adam, who's now in Los Angeles, is there because of two internships. So I understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. You want to have your other testifiers?
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Dan Dorman, former State Representative Dan Dorman, is here today. So,
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Dorman. I'm the Executive Director of the Albert Economic Development Agency, do economic development essentially for the City of Albert Lea and Fremont County. And a couple things that we hear repeatedly from particularly the manufacturing sector is the importance of internships and how they do, just as described here, how they result in many cases full-time employment. I think to your earlier question about would it create an incentive to game the system by, you know, not hiring a full-time employee by this, I think the dollars involved are not enough to really create that disincentive to say, hey, I don't think I'll put a full-time employee on. I think what you'll rather see, which also speaks to the somehow related to your field of work, is the goal isn't just to have the student have an experience. Rather, it is to try to increase employment in Greater Minnesota. The unemployment in Greater Minnesota is higher than the metro area. We have different needs, and Senator Aiken did a pretty good job of expressing that, of why this is important. And the story you just heard here is repeated over and over or can be repeated over and over, and we think that this will only accelerate that, helping us to stabilize employment in our communities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, Madam Chair, we also have Joan Wilshire here, who is going to testify to the amendment we added, as well as possibly to the whole bill.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Joan Wilshire. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Council on Disability. And yes, I'm here to kind of talk to you a little bit about employment for people with disabilities and why internships are so vital for the community. And then actually, I'm going to just throw in a little bit about our experience within my agency, because actually, you know, I'm working up all this for people with disabilities. I forget my own agency. We've got great stories on internships. But I just want to throw out some facts here about the employment for people with disabilities, because it's very dismal. Whether you live in our state or other states, the unemployment rate is at an all-time high for people with disabilities. So currently in Minnesota, you know, 20% of the population has a disability. Now, when you're looking at the U.S. data on unemployment for people with disabilities without actually, employment rate for without people with disabilities, it's at 7.9. Then when you're looking at the unemployment rate for people with disabilities, it's doubled, 13.7. So we know right there that we have a difficult time just getting a job as being people with disabilities. Also, to give you a bigger picture of people with disabilities about the poverty rate, certainly when you're looking at without people with disabilities, the poverty rate there is at 9.1. And again, when you're looking at people with disabilities, the poverty rate doubles, more than doubles, at 25.3%. So we are the poorest of the poor. We're one of the poorest minorities, and we have difficulty getting jobs just to get employed. So we know that internships help. It helps us get literally our foot or wheels or what have you in the door. And so, and that's needed. And so definitely, you know, we'd want you to consider this amendment because it will help individuals. We look for data on, can you give us a stat on if you got an internship as a person with a disability, what were your statistics to be employed? We couldn't find any, but we know it works. I can tell you in my office that in the last 5 years, I've been in a grant opportunity with the Department of Human Services. And I've hired over 17 interns that it was a joint venture between us and DHS where they worked in our office and with them. And I would say well over 50, almost 60% have gone on and stayed within the state. And some of these people did have disabilities and some did not, these interns. And so it's been a very successful program. So we know internships work. It gives a chance for the employer and the employee to see, is it a fit? Is it what you want? So it's both the good and the bad all kind of wrapped up in one. And it just really allows the individual to get a good feel of if it's something they want to go into. So we highly urge you to consider the amendment because it will help the community for people with disabilities.
Senator, there's other questions on it too, but I just a question on this part of the bill. What method would one use to define whether or not a person has a disability?
Well, again, the Office of Higher Education is the one that's going to be overseeing this, and they have a lot of flexibility in determining how to, I think, ascertain, you know, who qualifies. I don't know if there's anyone else. Mr. Mike Miller from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities is here as well, and he could maybe testify to that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Miller. I'm with Flaherty and Hood, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Thanks, Mr. Miller.
The amendment that you voted onto the bill does define disabilities within the Americans with Disabilities Act.
I'm going to let counsel address that, please.
Okay.
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Mr. Miller. The definition, who will determine whether a person falls into that definition and forward that on to the Commissioner of Revenue? I mean, who is going to be, because in the normal context, this is a highly disputed issue, you know, and that term is very broad. So who is going to have the competence to signify that a person has this disability as defined, and then what sort of process will be used to, I mean, I don't think OHE has medical doctors or, you know, people who are competent to review medical records and make those sorts of determinations. So I think there is a need for some sort of certainty, at least, or some direction as to what has to happen before the 60% level of the credit is reached, because the definition won't do it, because somebody will have to make a determination whether a person falls within that definition.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Miller.
Wouldn't the school itself know if the student itself, if the student has a disability, wouldn't they have to identify that in some other way?
Mr. Fuller.
No, the Americans with Disability Act, I mean, the procedure there is somebody will request an accommodation. I mean, the only way somebody would know is if the person came to them. And then there may or may not be a dispute as to whether or not they do have a disability. So, I mean, I think this is only being brought up so that there can be a process. You know, the intent is to incentivize employers to hire people with a disability. That's, you know, that's clear. The question is there a process in place that allows these individuals to be identified so that tax credit can be obtained? And I think that's lacking now. And I don't think OHE has the expertise to do this. So you should probably think about how that determination can be made.
Madam Chair, Kim Kang with the Minnesota State Council on Disability. Most colleges do have a disability services division within, and typically they would probably be consulted on whether that is considered a disability under the ADA. So there is generally a department within the post-secondary to actually assist with that determination.
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, that's helpful. I think what the bill needs then is something that describes that, you know, describes what the process is, because you're giving a tax credit. Commissioner of Revenue is going to, you know, have to determine whether you get a 40 or 60. We probably want some sort of documentation. And so as you move ahead, you have to think about what that would be, what's the easiest way to do it, because I don't think there's any foolproof way that I've heard yet that any particular individual will be, properly classified as a disabled person.
Madam Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
I think that clearly a student that applies for this program that comes from the institution as a disabled person, so the only thing that you will have to do, I believe, is just to say that as determined by the college, but the student will come to the internship program as a student of the institution is referred, and because it will be, I think that determination is done by the college. So I think we might have to do this.
Senator
Sharon.
I think that I would encourage that we step away as this proceeds to talk about the process that is used so that when I'm applying as a business for my tax credit, that I have a document that's agreed to, that if I submit that with my tax credit counted on my tax forms, that I have a form with that, something from the university or something. You have to think through how is it that they're going to document that they deserve a 60% tax credit on the wages that were spent for the intern for this period of time. That's what I think that we need to get into place, and it just requires us to, as we proceed forward from here, to think about improving the bill with that language.
Ms. King.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, we would be happy to, I guess, try to get some more information on what the process is at the university level, how they determine, if a student has a disability. It sounds like that would probably be the best course of action, is they would identify that person. So we would be happy to get that information back to the committee.
Well, Senator Bonoff, I think you got to talk to the Department of Revenue, too. You have to talk about the side that's given the tax credit is what needs to know. What do they need in order to be assured that when they're giving a business a tax credit, that it's that they just haven't said, we've got a bunch of interns that are meeting disability requirements, so 60% of this out. There has to be a process in place that we authorize and that works. So, and it's not in the language, so we need to make that improvement.
Okay. Senator Eakin? We didn't have the amendment before, so we didn't have a chance to review it. So I guess what I'd like to offer with regard to this is, if you want to work on this and get this worked out in a way that, we all feel comfortable that we've sent a bill out of this committee that is clean, because it may or may not come back because it's got the tax provision, depends on where it's carried. So I would either be comfortable, one of two things, we, go through this discussion, then lay the bill on the table while you work on it and bring it back up another time. Or if you do want to move it out of here today, then I would recommend that we not put the amendment on today and that you work on it and put it on in the tax committee.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Yeah.
So I was thinking, yeah, we will take the amendment out for
Thank
now,
you.
And we can certainly work on it in the interim. And
so I think the motion would be Senator Eakin moves that the which one was that the A13 amendment be withdrawn from the Senate File 241 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay.
Opposed.
Procedurally, don't we need to reconsider the motion by which it was adopted instead? Isn't that the proper procedure?
Thank you.
So having voted on the prevailing side, I move we reconsider the vote by which the A13 amendment was adopted.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Lurie.
You're welcome.
To that motion, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good.
Now it just is now it's no longer there.
Okay. Senator Eakin withdraws the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam
All those
Chair.
In favor? Oh, we don't have to
we
vote
don't
on
have
that.
To do
okay,
that.
Good.
We're done.
It is my first year chairing. Full disclosure, we know that. Okay, good. Senator Eakin, and thank you. And thank you for bringing the idea forward. It doesn't mean the committee's against the idea.
Sure. Good. No, and Madam Chair and members, I very much appreciate the input and the insight on these issues. And I... And also, Senator Torres-Rae, I know you were talking about the concern about, you know, making sure that this isn't just being used, you know, or gamed. And certainly I'm open to any suggestions to tighten things up to make sure that that doesn't happen. There is a requirement in there. And I, too, want to make sure that this is being used to actually add employment, not just replace it.
So, Senator Sharon, you had a question.
Couple of questions. We still have to vote on the bill.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Mine is more of a statement. I think that this idea is because we've been talking about a variety of things. That these internships not only create for rural Minnesota an opportunity for students who would otherwise, as we heard in the testimony today, be considering to going back to North or South Dakota or wherever they're from, which is also part of my district. No. because what happens in our community, Mankato, I'm sure this is in other rural communities, is they don't know about the opportunities, and we're working in our community to figure out how to connect businesses so the students learn the opportunity. But they create community; they start to become a part of our community, and they learn the people that they're working with. They become a part of the business community. They become engaged with the greater Mankato area growth. I mean, these are all sorts of ways in which you build the relationship of the community to the student who thinks up until then they have to go up to Minneapolis or St. Paul to get a job or to some major area. And we're you know, losing really the talented people that we're educating out of the rural part of the state. It's true over in Winona, too, I'm sure. So, or any of the other parts of the state. So, and I like the idea of the internship associated with the major, because it connects them to a potential job, and because I believe that internships increase the understanding of the importance of the theory in the laboratory experience or the content in the classroom. You know, it's similar to clinical experiences for nurses. If you go in and you have to apply a biochemistry process on a person, it makes a lot more sense than it does when you're just in a chemistry class. So connecting the internship to the work concept that the student has in the future, I think, even though there are other values to internship, for the purposes for which we're seeking here, I really like that component. I hope we don't lose that as you move forward through the various committees. It's part of why I'm on the bill.
Got it, Senator Sharon. Thank you. Senator Miller, and then we'll come back to Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, this is a bill that I carried last year and that we actually passed twice and was vetoed twice in the governor's tax bill. It was vetoed by the governor. It was in our omnibus tax bill. It was a little bit smaller. I think it had $1 million price tag, so it grew over over the year. But And this idea was first brought to me by students from Winona State University, the Student Senate, and they had concerns about internship opportunities in greater Minnesota. And as Senator Sharon mentioned, there were plenty of opportunities in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in the metro area, There were plenty of opportunities in other metro areas outside the state, plenty of opportunities in Washington, D.C., but not enough opportunities in greater Minnesota where, in many cases, they have year-long leases on their housing. They have other part-time jobs, so it's difficult for them to leave the communities where they're attending college because of those other commitments that they have. And then this, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities had a bill just after that, so we worked together and we tried to really shape this bill to address some of those concerns that our college students had. The hidden piece that we can't legislate, and this goes to Senator Torres Ray's point, because I had the same concern, but I think it actually has the opposite effect, and this is something that we can't legislate, but we heard a good example with Ms. Miles, is a lot of times internships lead to full-time jobs. And we can't write that in legislation, that's mandatory, but we see it more often than not. And it's so extremely important for those of us in greater Minnesota to try to keep some of these college graduates in our communities. And the best way to do that is to have these internship opportunities to get them inside the door at our companies, whether they're large, medium, small. And this is perhaps one of the best ways to do it. And the more we can see Ms. Miles' situation occur in greater Minnesota, the better off we're going to be in greater Minnesota. And the other thing that's important, and I'm hearing from a lot of small businesses, is they don't know how to reach out to the college students. They don't know how to reach out to the two-year or four-year institutions in our communities. And so I think that's another piece of this that I'm starting to have those discussions. I'm having discussions with Deed, with the chamber. I'm trying to figure out a way that we can utilize our local chamber of commerces, our local workforce development offices, to work together with our local colleges and universities to match these folks up, because I still think that's a missing piece in all of this. So I'll continue to do that work, but thank you, Senator Eakin, for bringing this forward. And Senator Sharon, I think you were an author last time with me. I know we had several discussions about it. So I think it's a great bill, and I'm happy to support it.
Very good. And to that point, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree. I think this is a tremendous opportunity that we really need to move forward. There is a kind of the technical piece about this tax that is provided kind of temporarily that will encourage something, and that's the piece that I think we need to fix, because if you say you can hire up to 5 interns, and you have a tax credit for that portion of the intern and not the employee, it's easy to think that as an employer, I just will hire 5 interns and then I will hire 5 more, because I do have an incentive, a money incentive to do this temporary hiring. And I think that there is a need to have the next step. So if the intent is, we open the door, we do this connection and provide this incentive, then there has to be a next incentive. If you really, because if not, I think you create a little bit of an incentive, and it will backfire that you just don't necessarily want to keep the employee, because you lose the tax credit. And so what happened there? There is something missing in there to continue that relationship, to encourage, to hire, and I don't know what that is. I don't know if you keep doing tax credits. I don't know if we can afford it.
But Senator Miller.
A need for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Torres Ray. I think that piece is the student, and I think they sell themselves. If you have a highly qualified student that's interning, obviously it worked with Ms. Miles, they wanted to keep her on board, and that's what the incentive was. We have great people, great students in our institutions, and they have to not only prove that they can do the job, and it's a good opportunity for them to learn if they want to do that job or not, but if it's a good fit, if they feel like they want to do that and they're making a difference for that company, they sell themselves, and hopefully that company will we'll hire them on. But there's nothing that we can do, I don't think, legislatively to require them to hire that person. But
Senator Bono.
I think the student sells themselves as well.
Everybody's excited about this conversation because now Senator Sharon has a point.
I just would like to follow up with Senator Torres-Ray. I think I understand the essence of what you're saying. First of all, it didn't make it through last time through the tax committee. It may not this time either because of the funding issue.
It was in the tax bill.
It was in the omnibus tax.
Oh, it was in the omnibus.
It got vetoed twice.
Well, we'll have to do something
you
about
need Senator Sharon.
For the record,
we'll have to thank you.
Madam Chair, just for the record,
you and I are going down to the governor's office.
The governor was supportive. It was the overall tax bill that was problematic.
Anyway, Senator Torres Ray, I don't want to leave with you thinking I didn't hear what I think is the essence of what you're saying. It's not about the student. It's about other people. It's the first of all, in rural Minnesota, what our employers are telling us, at least in my region, is we're looking for highly qualified employees. We're losing our students. We want to keep them. It's not like we're going to displace people. We're looking for more of these highly qualified, educated people to stay in our area. They're having trouble with that. So this fits for the current environment in the rural part of the state of holding on to our very finest students who are educating there so they don't leave. So it doesn't create an incentive to just use students and to avoid full-time employment of other people, which I think is what you're saying could occur. Maybe in the metro area that might happen.
Right.
I don't know the dynamics there. But at least the current economic environment in terms of getting a highly educated workforce to stay in a rural part of the state, this kind of approach helps the student engage in the community, develop a different kind of relationship than the student relationship to a host community, gets engaged in all of the activities that go around being employed, and it creates an environment where the student sees that life in Mankato really is pretty fabulous. So I'd like to stay here. So, and then maybe Winona.
I was going to say. She saw me coming close to the microphone.
Senator Eakin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I too think, obviously, if you continually would replace employees or continually replace interns with other interns, that's very disruptive in their business practice as well. So I don't think there's really much incentive to do that. Their incentive is to find well-qualified people. We're talking about, you know, jobs that are going to be more skilled jobs because they're obviously seeking out people who are working, you know, majoring in a college and in an area. And I think that goes to kind of what you were talking about too, Senator Sharon, about the as far as making sure that it's in their major area of study, because you want them to, obviously the businesses are going to be looking for people who are majoring in areas that they're dealing with because they want people who have those skills. So I don't see as much of a problem as you may, but again, I'm open to suggestions as far as how to, you know, tighten things up if at all possible, because we want to make sure that it's not being used in ways that is not productive or meets the ends to which we're seeking. And I also wanted to thank Senator Miller for bringing this idea forward, and it's such a good idea, we decided to put more money into it. So,
I think Senator Kent, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to go back to the issue about the course of study, because I definitely agree and hear that point. But I also know that, especially at that stage in life, in college, people are trying things on and evolving and merging. And we heard in a previous meeting from Metro State about one of their courses of study that is science-based but also management. So you could see somebody having a science degree but wanting to do something slightly different with it. Or I actually know somebody who got his degree in engineering, realized he was not cut out to actually be an engineer, and went into sales. So it would be a way if somebody says, you know, I've gotten this far in my studies, but it's not quite right as I'm learning more, and I want to branch out. So I'm wondering if there's a way to adjust it to say closely related to this course of study or eventual career path or something like that to allow some experimentation.
Well, Senator Kent and Senator Eakin, if you could add that or eventual career path, I too would be much more at peace about it, because I do think internships offer that opportunity to explore in a way that lines up with a potential career path. So, you know, and
sure. And Madam Chair, and I would be open to that because I think the eventual career path normally would be their major area of study in most cases. But Senator Sharon, I don't know if she has thoughts.
Senator Kent, would you like to propose that oral amendment?
If Senator Eakin and others would be open to it, I'd like to propose an amendment that says closely related to the eligible student's course of study or intended career path.
Or potential
career path.
I would be open to that. So
on line, let's line 2.8.
On line 2.8, after the word study, we would say, or potential career path. Insert.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair, just wondering, I just want to make sure Senator Sharon's not going to, we're not going to see on Monday her removing her name from this. I'd like to get her input on this.
Senator Sharon. And anecdotally, Senator Sharon, so my theater major, who's graduating this year, doesn't want to be in theater. He's now trying to get an internship in marketing because he's very creative. And so they are considering him for these internships. But those are the examples. I was a psychology major. I went into fashion retailing. You know, people change.
No, I don't doubt that. I wish I had changed in some way.
So, Senator Sharon, could you live with this amendment?
I wish, you know, as you can see, my undergraduate degree might not fit all that well with the course that I took in life. But I'm proof that you do change, believe me, from what you get a degree in. Anybody who thinks they end up all the time where their degree was, that's another misnomer. But I don't think that this language will interfere with what I think the objective of this should be, because I think in the end they're going to end up with internships, hopefully, that fit within, because it is the application of theory in the classroom. It is having the live experience of what it is and learning that I really like about how this language is written. And I really am hoping that if this language is in there, that we don't lose that, because that's the guts of this value of the internship to me. Yeah. The value to the rural part of the community is that we sustain this relationship with these wonderful students and merge them into the community's life in a different way than they would otherwise have if they were just sitting up there up on the hill up at MSU, you know, and mm-hmm. And going around with everybody on Friday night, you know, that's a very different student life than the one that you've had as a result of an internship. So,
Ms. Miles.
Madam Chair, committee members, I 100% agree with that. And I'd like to speak to just a few more benefits with the internships. And you talked about the students. We sell ourselves. Something that I think is so crucial with an internship is that something that I've run into in helping other students and being at a state level is that students don't know how to communicate their skills. They don't understand that transition between classroom and real world. Some of us just aren't grasping that. And being in an internship, we discover what skills we actually do have that we don't have a chance to talk about in a classroom, what soft skills we have, and we see how it's applicable. And that one of the major reasons is, no offense to Mankato, but when I came there, you know, as students, you know, we want to go and see the world. So we think of talent. Well, where's the talent? They're the CEOs at the big companies. They're this, that, and the other thing. But I discovered the talent, all the talent that I need is right there in Mankato, in the small businesses, in the university professors. And one last, and so that's the selling point is the talent, because whether students know it or not, they are talented. They just don't know how to tell you that yet. And this internship's helped that. In addition to that, as a student that goes to a liberal arts university, it's been discussed that, well, there's issues with professors going along with internships at some point. But that's changing, and part of this is also helping the professors find the real-world application that they've been looking for, and they can build these relationships with businesses, because I think professors have been a little intimidated about the process as well. And so this not only solidifies the fact that we're here to support that. So,
Ms. Miles, yes. So do you support the change, the proposed change?
Yes. And I'm an international relations major, which is basically political science but global. And I'm working at Fine Impressions, and we sell greeting cards, wholesale greeting cards. How does that relate? Much of what I'm learning at my job is, in my mind, so applicable to what I have learned in the classroom, because I've learned about negotiation, world politics, how countries interact with each other. And I see the way our business goes to market, and I see the issues between our customers and the issues of what we need to solve, and it's problem solving and it's critical thinking. And it's, in my opinion, very much applicable to what I've learned in the classroom and vice versa.
And Ms. Miles and Senator Eakin, to that point, if you look at line 2.2, that's a related issue.
That's the amendment, you mean?
No. If the online 2.2 of the bill, it says that an intern must be an eligible student who has been admitted to a major program that is closely related to the intern experience. Mm-hmm. And so that would need to be wordsmithed as well. Sure. To reflect the intent that the Kent change brings.
Sure.
So I'm open to suggestion. Let's think about it. Council has any suggestion?
Madam Chair, we sort of have a conflict because on the one hand, you know, you want it to be tightly, you know, the bill says it has to be closely related, but of course we don't want people not to get these internships because somebody decides that that has a lot of teeth in it and that's not closely enough related, so.
So, Mr. Fuller, how might we change that that would reflect the committee's intention to give our students the broadest opportunity to be accepted into an internship they want?
That's sort of a political decision, you know, as to what the policy would be here. My suggestion would be that since everybody is sort of goodwill, that you do make some sort of change, and then, but we're doing it on the fly. And if the intent is, I think you should determine what your intent is. Is it to make sure that looks like the person had a career interest in this and or it relates to their training, they can qualify? Or do you want it to be tied closely to their training and perhaps not fully utilize the program? So I think that's, you have to make that decision up front. Right now, it's the way it's written is fairly tight. If somebody decided closely related, I mean, something very strict, as Senator Kent pointed out, that might swallow up the program. So I think we're doing it on the fly. Make an amendment, but with the understanding that there'll be further discussion because we are doing it on the fly.
Yep.
So I would amend both places, Madam.
And very good. Senator Eakin.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, and I was just going to suggest that we just mirror the language that Senator Kent proposed in the first part so that it reflects the refers to, I guess, their intended career path, or I can't remember the exact.
So, Senator Eakin, I suggest, and I'm just giving words right now, and I'll let Mr. Fuller do it officially, but that on line 2.2, after experience, we might add, or is in keeping with the student's potential, or, you know, interest in a potential career path.
Or That sounds good. Or, Madam Chair, or the intended career path, is that the language? What was the
potential
language?
Potential career path. Mr. Fuller.
Perhaps you want to put that language after program. So you say that who has been admitted to a major program or has an intended career path that is closely related to the intended experience.
I like that better. Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear what Senator Kent said in the other one, so I can't. I don't know if that's sort of the same or not. Let's see here. Did you put it after study, Senator Kent?
Yes.
And what did you say?
Put course of study or potential career path.
Well, we said intended in the other one, so it's, let's be consistent. I don't know if there's much.
Intended? Potential? Potential.
Madam Chair, I think
potential.
At the moment, but
yeah, potential. Okay,
places.
Let's use potential. And members, it's good we're doing this on the fly. We're the policy committee, and this is where the work should happen on the bill, so it's a good thing.
And Madam Chair, I just thought I'd mention, as far as potential or intended, it doesn't make much difference to me, but intended seems to it encourages students to kind of go into their area of a major field of study, I feel, but I leave it to
Senator Eakin. Which do you prefer?
So intended, I thought, would be a little,
good.
Little
okay.
bit tighter.
Yep. Okay, so
Senator Bonner, you know,
Senator Sharon?
Just to muck it up, just to wordsmith it to death, is eliminating closely going to help accomplish what Senator Ken is talking about? The term closely? If we just said related, if we didn't tighten down? Because I can tell you how your intern experience was directly related to your career in education. I would have no question that what you were doing there in and are continuing to do at Precision Press is entirely related to the courses that you were taking and that you are applying things in that job that you were learning in the classroom. I don't have any trouble making that connection at all.
Senator
especially
Sharon.
The international stuff with a company like Taylor Core. So.
Senator Sharon, council agrees with you that it would also be advantageous to delete the word closely.
Yes.
But let's keep the others as well.
Yes.
The other
yes.
changes. Very good. So, Senator Pratt, I know you had your hand raised. Is it with regard to this point? Can we finish this? Or is it something different? If it's regard to...
Before it was something different, but now it's to this point.
Very good. Senator Pratt.
That's fine. You know, I guess my question is, as I've listened to the discussion, it's hard for me to identify what we're trying to accomplish when we've got examples like a global political science major going into print marketing, when we have a theater major going into some other marketing. Those are unintended career paths that, you know, quite honestly, they've sought out themselves. And so is it up to the institution then to make that determination whether or not it's a potential career path? Where I think what we want to do is keep it as open as possible.
Right.
And I feel like even though we're trying to clarify the language with our intent, we're almost clamping it down too much versus keeping it as open as possible. So... I think we've got some language here. We've got some assumptions in the fiscal note that really do accomplish what we're trying to do. And who's to say what that right career path is? Senator Sharon, I think you described it very well. There are aspects and skills that are developed in the classroom that are transferable among a number of different industries. And I've hired entry-level positions. And Senator Torres-Ray, once I've got them trained in, I don't want to lose them because that's more expensive than getting the tax credit over and over and over. And so I think there's already an incentive for that ongoing employment relationship. And so I'm just concerned with some of the language that we're talking about almost having the opposite effect of what we intend.
Senator Pratt, counsel likes to work on the fly, and he could share broader language for us to consider if we choose to go in that direction. So, Mr. Fuller.
Well, again, it's sort of a policy decision. What Senator Pratt is saying recommends almost eliminating any of the conditions and leaving it more open-ended. So that's a decision you have to make. If you just want to broaden the current restriction instead of having an intent, I would suggest you just have an interest, that the student has an interest in the intern.
I think as we start going towards intended career paths and certainly there's an expectation that the institution is going to take a step to determine whether or not it is related, whether it is a potential career path, means that the student probably has to put some thought behind it. I don't think that's a bad idea at all. And I think the student should be able to articulate the skills, as you just did, articulate the skills that you've learned in one major to apply to a different industry or an industry that may not, on the surface, look entirely related. And so I'm not suggesting removing all the restrictions. I do think that we want the student, if they're going to earn credit, to be able to justify why this internship is, in fact, valuable. I'm just worried that some of the clarifying language is almost going to tighten it up beyond what we really want it to do.
Mr. Fuller, can you put your...
There's the other side of the coin is that you have an employer who's looking at intern applications. So they will probably pick those students who have more of a major or more of an interest or the abilities they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So that could be the filter that's more important than what's the student is expressing, more than what the employer is interested in. And so that would be a different way of sort of characterizing the way to determine what, it's, you know, it's not only what student is good for employer, but what employer is good for a student. But we've been doing the latter and not the former. So maybe there's a balance there that could work.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering how the committee would feel if we simply removed the word closely. So it's an intern must be an eligible student who has been admitted to a major program that is related to the intern experience as determined by the mm-hmm. eligible institution.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair.
Senator Eakin.
I think that that would be a good oral amendment.
So if that would just be taking Senator Sharon's suggestion of just eliminating the word closely and then not adding the other language.
Well, the other, Senator Miller, the other thing about that is that, and I see, you know, Office of Higher Ed here, that would certainly allow the Office of Higher Ed, who's administering this, to make that determination. And so in the case of Ms. Miles, one would hope that OHG would say, oh, very related, very related. Right? I think we have Tricia Grimes coming to the table. Yeah, exactly. And if we were to do that, members, if we were to do that, we would also want to take out closely on line 2.7, if we were to do that. But go ahead, Ms. Grimes.
For the record, Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. We, frankly, would leave that determination up to the campuses. We would not try to make that with our small staff, that kind of a decision.
So, and actually the bill does say that. It says as determined by the eligible institution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move that I don't know what we've adopted and what we
haven't. We never did vote on any others, so there's no withdrawing necessary.
But I would I move that an oral amendment that we remove the word closely in line 2.2 and 2.7. And I don't know, Council, if it's anywhere else. Those are the two spots that jump out at me at this point.
That's it.
So on that motion, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Senator Pratt, is that open enough for you, or do you...
That's fine, Madam Chair. I just wanted to throw in my two cents. I was the only one that hadn't talked yet.
Well, they can keep working on it, though. You know, okay. I think, Senator Eakin, as you go forward, the thing to keep in mind, I think you've heard the tenor and the, you know, that we're just trying to make sure we give the most amount of opportunity to both the employers and your students so that these matches. We often joke in our office about we think there's a need for match.com. And, you know, this is one way to do that. And we're really pleased that you're pursuing it and offering it. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we voted on the amendment, I have a quick question on the fiscal note. And the particularly under the line for state colleges and universities, incremental cost of well over $500,000. Trying to figure out where the incremental cost is coming from, because as I'm reading through the assumptions, it's not entirely clear to me when really it's replacing in some cases some classroom work.
Well, Senator Pratt, the difficulty I'm having is that we're in the policy committee. It goes to tax, and then so we're not really the fiscal note is not before us in the policy committee yet. It's fine with me if you know, council wants to answer the question, mm-hmm. but we don't have MMB here. You know, people prepared to answer questions on the fiscal note because we're in the policy committee. But go ahead. Is there something I'm saying?
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt,
that is just what Minsky put in there is basically, if you look, trying to find the right page. On page 10, that is just the tuition revenue because they're assuming that the students would be taking 3 credits, and they're assuming a per credit amount, the 3 credits the student would be taking. So then that money, that tuition money revenue would then be used to help pay for faculty costs and that for the faculty members that would be supervising the student. So that's what.
I guess my question.
Senator Pratt.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. And I guess I understand some of that, but it seems to be incremental, and I understand this isn't a finance discussion now. I'm trying to understand the finances to see if there's any policy implications that we might want to discuss. And so I'm still not really grasping the incremental increase of the expenditure because we've already got faculty. Is the assumption that we have to hire additional faculty in order to cover this program?
Madam Senator Klassen.
In response to Senator Pratt, we had a program like this at the high school level, and there are some charges that are involved because our teacher needs to go out into the community and make those contacts so that they have a list of people that are available. Then they also go out and do site visits with the people. They also have projects that they must present at the end of their term. So there is, it's basically a professor teaching a class, so to speak, almost that entire time. So there's going to be a cost. Whether that's justified, I'm not sure. But
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator Pratt, just know we would not carry that cost as the state. That would be in Minsky, the tuition, that's how they would account for it.
For a portion of it, correct. And I see that in the revenues to the that are covered under the tuition included. What I'm trying to understand is it truly an incremental cost with additional staffing, or is it the reallocation of current staffing?
Senator Pratt, I wonder that every time I read a fiscal note.
Mary Rothschild is here from Minsky.
Oh, Mary Rothschild? Can answer that from Minsky.
And Madam Chair, just to clarify, I mean, what we're talking about here is we're talking about affordability. And while we're giving a tax credit, it also looks like we're adding additional expense to the student through the increased tuition. So I want to make sure that we understand what's incremental and what's kind of already wrapped in and just hasn't been accounted for somewhere else.
Thank you, Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Committee, my name is Mary Rothschild. I'm a system administrator at the Minnesota State College and University System Office for Workforce Development and help prepare the fiscal note. Our understanding is that our faculty contracts permit faculty to supervise students in internships. These are existing courses within program. Many programs of study have an existing internship course. And so it would be part of a, you know, sort of the traditional faculty contract to supervise students who are paying the credits, the cost of these courses. So that's the compensation to the faculty that was described in the fiscal note. In addition to that, the only true expense, meaning incremental expense, would be for the administrative costs of managing the paperwork that would facilitate the accountability to both the Office of Higher Education and any other entity that needed to examine the paperwork evidencing the student agreement between the employer, the faculty member, and the student, that those all three sign off on an agreement, and that's the administrative cost. But there's no incremental cost, meaning no additional faculty that we would expect to be hired in connection with these kinds of courses, because we have a cap on the number of credits in most programs, so we're not adding new classes for students to have internships.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I appreciate that because I am concerned about having these internships provide an additional burden to students as well and understanding where those incremental, what appeared to be incremental costs were coming from that we were asking those students to take on when this is the right decision for students, for employers, and for the economic vitality of the outstate region.
Very good. Mrs. Biden.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, these would not really be additional costs. These would just be a student would be enrolling for an internship just as if they were to enroll for any other course.
Mm-hmm.
The fiscal note basically just shows how that tuition revenue would be allocated to basically cover the cost of that internship, just as if a student enrolled for a sociology class, that mm-hmm. tuition revenue would go towards paying the cost of the professor teaching that course.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Senator Pratt. Okay. And I would like to point out that Sean Oyes, the legislative assistant for the committee, began as my intern. So it shows. It works. And my assistant before that, John Eichten, began as my intern. So we hire our interns. Very good.
Thank you, Chair. And, could I ask what his major was?
Yep. Mr. Oyes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my major was political science and my minor was Spanish, and I'd like to point out that I also interned for Senator Torres Rey as well.
Very good.
We are so happy you're here.
Yeah. Thank you. Looks like we're ready to entertain a motion. Senator Eakin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will move that Senate File 241 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes.
As amended.
As amended.
Very good. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good job. Members. And with that, let's anything else about next week? Oh, members, Tuesday there is no meeting because Tuesday evening we have our joint committee with the House on the regent selection. So in our joint House-Senate committee, we will be voting on who we as a joint committee recommend to move forward. Okay, so where is it? Having no other business before us, the committee is adjourned.